It's time for What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.
Yes, it is. Morena, Steve.
Morena, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good, good to hear it. So much happening in the world of politics over the last couple of weeks, but I do want to sort of hone in on this budget announcement last week. It's been a real time, and there's been some pretty scathing criticisms of the budget coming out from the opposition. Chloe Swarbrick has said that Christopher Luxon's government has no hope, no plan, no ambition, no vision for our country, and that the budget is yet more proof of that. It's pretty harsh commentary.
Yeah, and I think if there's any indication of what their vision is, it's accumulation of wealth with those who least need it, taken from those who most need it. So we've got 1 in 7 children in poverty. We've got the highest rates of homelessness that New Zealand has ever had. And the budget spends $4.5 billion, which is 80% of its new capital expenditure, on roads and military equipment. On top of that, it's going to spend a bunch more money on prison cells, nearly $500 million. So their plan is kind of lock people up, more war machines, more roads, and let's not worry about people living on the streets and children living in poverty.
I mean, Nicola Willis, finance minister, has sort of said that being relatively tight in these areas is sort of a long-term plan for ensuring that we don't have to kick the can down the road and deal with the costs later on. But do you feel as though the high investments in those other areas is a bit of a contradiction to that?
I mean, it's like if you tell your kids who are in poverty and people living on the streets, hey, don't worry about it, in a few years' time we're going to have balanced books. For what? It's a meaningless ambition. And let's not forget that this government is still paying the $2.7 billion tax cut they gave to landlords in 2023. I mean, we're still doing that. And that came through borrowing money. So they literally put us further into debt to give landlords a tax cut, but have reduced funding to housing in terms of Housing New Zealand. Have not done anything meaningful, in fact made the situation worse in terms of the polarisation between the wealthy and the poor. There's no major increase in primary health funding. They have put some CapEx into new hospital investment, which is necessary but long overdue, and it basically just holds the line on a crumbling healthcare system. And they're at the same time going to lay off around another 9,000 public servants, which means that basic public services are all going to get markedly worse over the coming years.
Let's hone in a little bit on health, because I know that health was sort of, in theory, one of the big winners of this budget, getting $5.8 billion of new spending into frontline services over 4 years, more sort of resources, paediatric palliative care. But you feel as though that's not enough or that's overdue?
Yeah, a lot of the sort of capital expenditure on buildings, which is stuff that has to be invested in upgrading our hospitals, has been put off and put off for far too long. So we have the basic infrastructure of our health system is crumbling, and they've rightly chucked some money at it, but far less than what we probably need, or certainly less than what we need. And at the same time, they're not fully investing in the understaffing that we already have. I mean, health workers are absolutely stretched. That means we're not getting the best outcomes for health. We've still got massive waiting lists, people queuing up at hospitals for hours on end. And primary health care, which is the way to stop secondary health care being the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, not being invested in. GPs have been crying out for greater support, and they're absolutely stretched. So our general practitioner acts as a kind of a service where people are doing it day and night, and there's no full support for that actual necessity, which keeps people out of hospital and keeps people out of chronic illness. That is where we should be investing money, and they simply are not doing that.
In terms of the New Zealanders that are doing it hardest at the moment, where do the Greens want to see money put to support them?
We're committed to, for a start, we're not sort of fixated on this jet to GBT, gross domestic product GDP ratio that these guys bang on about, and we're willing to tax the rich to pay for the things that we actually need. So we will properly invest in health, or ensure free dental care. We're doing early childhood education funding. We will end homelessness. Poverty is a political choice, as we see by this government's investment choices. And then within the money that's currently been spent, we would not be spending money on overpriced roads. The most expensive road in New Zealand history is proposed to be built in Northland. We would not be spending money on military over making sure people have a warm, dry, affordable home. That would be our priority.
Mm. It seems as though there's a lot of focus on, you know, sort of future government debt and ensuring that there isn't too much spending happening right now so that we're not dealing with the economic consequences later on. Is that a good way to think about things, or do you have to spend money to make money?
The big lie that this government sort of advances is the idea that the state is a household. It is not. You need to think of it differently. It's reasonable, and most economies have a debt ratio well above 50% of GDP. This government's pushing our debt ratio up to around 46% this year, and then they're going to lower it down to 44% of GDP by 2030. In fact, we should be far more comfortable with having 50%, even up to 60% of GDP in debt, because the government can borrow money far more cheaply than the citizen at about 2%. And if the state doesn't pay for it, then the citizen pays for it. That's your health care, that's your education, that's everything. And so we take the view that we're better to, that the government is paying for the cost of those if it needs to borrow some money to do it. And let's point out that, you know, unemployment's going to go up, forecast to go up by Treasury over the coming year, 5.5%, around 227 people will be on, 227,000 people will be on job seeker. Cost of living is still going to go up. Real inflation is still going to go up by 4%. Real wages are forecast to go down in 2026. And, you know, on top of child poverty increasing and homelessness, no investment in the environment or in climate change. We've had 21 extreme weather events this year, states of emergency. No investment in that stuff. But we're going to balance the books somehow at some point in the future. It's just the wrong thinking. It's like it's not the priority, because we can have comfortably a higher GDP ratio, and we can make sure people have a warm, dry home and have affordable health care and have, you know, an affordable education, because, of course, the other thing is getting rid of the tertiary education support.
Mm. I do want to touch on this Treasury sort of forecast, because there's been a few different sort of perspectives on whether it's too optimistic. They expect the government's operating balance to get back into surplus in 2028-2029. Is that overly sort of looking through rose-tinted glasses?
Yeah, I mean, I think I sort of agree with Chris Hipkin's take on this, is that it's kind of making the balance sheet look good so they can make some sort of public statement about we're going to get back into balance, but in fact give it 10 minutes and there'll be some other thing that money's been spent on, and, you know, the books won't be in balance. Now the GDP debt thing is shouldn't be confused for the fact that you've got to make sure you've got sufficient income from your taxes to pay for your expenditure. This government wants to constantly cut taxes from those who are most able to pay more tax, and at the same time spend more money on things that are lower priority, you know. And their solution for poverty is, let's make more space for more people to be in prison, let's put more cops on the beat, and that thinking is absolutely grotesque from my point of view. It's like, how can you possibly approach a healthy, functional society by thinking the way you deal with poverty is just make more prisons? The idea that they're actually meaningfully going to have a balanced books is not correct. A balanced books is when people aren't in poverty, when people aren't homeless, and when, you know, children get three decent meals a day.
Well, would you also say that if they continue to ignore environmental and spending money on climate change, wouldn't that cost a lot more further down the line?
No, because the cradle of our existence is a healthy environment.
Yeah.
And in fact, most of our existing economic activity, I mean, our biggest income earner for, or second biggest income earner for a long period of time, is people coming to visit the beautiful country. And we are fools to think that we don't have a duty of care to care for the biodiversity that we have inherited that is irreplaceable, exists only in this part of the world. And climate change is an existential threat that is the biggest single threat to the economy, to human health, to well-being and to biodiversity and to basically our survivability over coming decades and centuries. So to think that we shouldn't be investing in those things is extreme short-termism.
Yeah,
we have to be investing in those things. If we want a healthy, thriving, livable planet, but also livable cities, then we need to be protecting those things that make life good, and that is, you know, general tree protection, protecting our fresh water, our oceans, making sure our beaches are swimmable and our drinking water is drinkable, because one of the consequences of the pollution that comes from our biggest polluter, the dairy industry, is that rural people have nitrate contamination, which is a risk for their health, bowel cancer, preterm birth. And so the logic of not protecting our environment just doesn't stack up the minute you look at it.
Yeah, so though they're saying that they're balancing the books now, further down the line, that's going to cost a lot of money, right?
Yeah, and in fact, you can't even replace biodiversity loss. There's no amount of money. Like, if you know, it's like money is needed to go into Department of Conservation and to Environmental Protection. I mean, they're getting rid of the Ministry of the Environment. They, you know, disestablished it. That's what one of the things we did in the last 2 weeks. And so they're trying to save money by skimping on the environment. And, you know, as you say, it's just going to cost us more down the track, certainly in climate, extreme weather events. There's no substantial investment in protecting communities from worsening extreme weather events. People who want to relocate, there's no kind of thinking around that adaptative response to extreme climate change.
Just wow.
No, I mean, it is just wow, yeah.
Yeah.
It's always staggering that they turn up with these things and you go, really, come on, like, how is it that we can't get on the same page on this stuff? Because I think most New Zealanders, when they're presented with these choices, will be going, why are you spending all that money on the military and no money on housing? You know, like, just not good enough.
To quote Dame Linda Topp, $2.1 billion on defence, what the?
Yeah, well, exactly. And the other thing, I mean, like, I feel embarrassed as a musician, I haven't mentioned this, but, like, you get a far bigger bang for buck investing in creative community and creative industries. Like, there's a phenomenal number of people can be employed in that or are already employed in that, and the ability for that to generate economic wealth and value for the country is huge. And it's an industry that doesn't have a massive ecological footprint, unlike dairy farming, but it can still create lots of jobs and, you know, lots of ways of people having livelihoods. But this government completely starves the arts and the creative and cultural sector. And I haven't even mentioned who bears the brunt of this, Māori and Pacifica, like the, you know, cutting of funding to, you know, basic services, actually has a disproportionately negative effect on Māori and Pacifica. So along with their other actions that are fundamentally divisive and seek to kind of pit, you know, migrant people and trans people and Māori people against other people, it's, you know, which is absolute crap. It's like such a negative way to approach the idea of us having a coherent society where we have a principle that everyone should thrive and everyone should be able to live a good life. They are really content to sow division and polarise people in terms of wealth, and, you know, scapegoat certain minority communities. It's just worst politics that you can dream up, frankly.
So much to discuss. We could continue going, but unfortunately that's all the time we have this morning. Thank you so much, Steve.
The good news is we're going to get rid of them in 6 months if we'll enroll and turn up to vote. That's fine.
Run vote. Hope. Thank you, Steve. Have a good one.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
That was What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.